everybody. Adam here, and today I'm joined by Zachary Becker, who is the convention organizer for the London GT. Welcome, Zach.
Hi, yeah, it's good to be here. Thanks.
And the reason we have you on is because you mentioned how first off, let's start off with kind of where you're coming from in terms of your experience with gaming, Games Workshop. Where did you start? I know for myself, as most everyone knows, I started with historicals mainly, and then I transitioned over to GW around Rogue Trader era, late Rogue Trader era. So in terms of yourself, how did you get into the GW games?
So I think probably quite a common story. I was at Walk, and I thought it was super cool, so I started chatting to him about what it was. Back then, I think Games Workshop games in my town were being sold through a local record store. So I went down and bought myself a bunch of Corn Berserkers and Gene Stealers, because no one told me that you had to have separate factions in different armies. But yeah.
Right.
So I bought those, managed to find my way into a Games Workshop, and immediately got sold a second edition starter set.
Okay.
But the guy that sold it to me didn't tell me was third edition was coming out in about 2 weeks. So next time I went in the store to try to learn how to play, there was a new edition, and they said, "You got to buy a rule book." I said, "No, I bought one of those last week." And they said, "Yeah, there's a new one now."
Wow.
So being a 10-year-old boy, I didn't have much pocket money to really splash out on another book, so I had to wait till Christmas to get that one.
But, that is that's an example of excellent salesman.
Yes, but anyway, so yeah, I started playing properly in third.
Okay.
Did pretty well in the tournament scene, as it was back then, run by Games Workshop. So I think I was like under 16s national champion or something.
Oh, okay.
And then yeah, played through seventh, fourth, dipped in and out in fifth and sixth, and then got really heavily back into the tournament scene at the start of seventh, and really was playing sometimes two tournaments a month in seventh.
Oh, okay.
As well as moving from just being a competitor and a gamer and a hobbyist to also being running the LGT as a sort of an aspect of my hobby, and a lot of the times I think that actually the event is my hobby, and I'm playing 40K as the sideline. But
a lot of times what I found, because I help the local store run the RTTs and the Grand Tournament they run out of our local store, I found it can basically replace your gaming part, especially if you normally play competitive. Me personally, I found it more a nice change of pace.
Yeah.
Where instead of being always like nose to the grindstone competitive, you get to just kind of step back and just not worry about it as much, because you're worried about more the event as a whole, as opposed to one particular game or one particular opponent.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the LGT is I'm there to make sure that 100, 200, 300 other people have fun.
Right.
Playing the game I love. In my own experience is very much changed over the last couple of, 18 months, mm-hmm. because, through running the LGT, I got involved with playtesting for Games Workshop,
right.
which I'll probably come on to talk about later. So actually, like, the majority of my games now are not actually, competitive games I can play in public. They're, played in my living room, to try to, stress test new units and see what they're all about. So the tournaments I have played, came to Nova recently. And I found that because I'm playing so much sort of beta testing, playtesting stuff,
mm-hmm.
actually the army I really wanted to play at Nova wasn't the one that I thought would win me the event. It was one that I thought might win 3 out of 8 games.
Okay.
So I just set myself a challenge of doing better than 3 out of 8.
Right.
Which I did, ended up winning 6 games, losing 2, and won my pod.
Okay.
But I've started playing, I'm not going to say for fun, but I'm playing fun lists in the competitive setting that will never win the event, but trying to do your best with them is still, a victory,
Yes.
Yeah. So my perspective's changed a lot recently, but it's pretty much where I'm at.
What tournament players, a lot of competitive players, especially as, I don't want to say getting older, as you become more experienced in the competitive scene, you start to challenge yourself. I think I've noticed I do that now. I always say my heyday was the 3.5 Chaos Codex. So that's the third edition. Ever since then, I've built most of my armies for my own enjoyment and what I want to do. And just like you just said, you want to challenge yourself or try something and, hey, say if this works and if I win one game, I'm happy, you know, with that list. So I tend to take lists that are not optimal, but at the same time, they're a bit more competitive than a narrative or a,
I'm completely the same. I mean, like, the list I took over was, it was, 15 Howling Banshees with Jane Zarr and Wave Serpents, you know, by all, you know, most of people look at the list and they laugh and they say it's terrible, but it had tricks, right? So it was like, it was units that weren't, optimal, but I played it a lot and I knew it inside out. And, you know, it was quite funny. A lot of people were surprised because there's all the sort of little things you can do with Banshees that no one really figures. Because no one plays them well, you know, you've got to play them so much to understand their potential. I said to Mike afterwards, you know, it was the most fun playing 40K I've ever had in my life. And it was, if I'd taken a Guard Soup list or a Chaos list, probably would have done a lot better, but I wouldn't have had as much fun. So.
Yeah, I'm going to the SoCal Open in San Diego, and I'm debating whether I want to take a list that's a little more tough as nails or just take something that I know will be fun for me and more importantly make my games go quicker because that's a thing still. but speaking of grand tournaments, you were, like I mentioned earlier, you run the London GT. Can you briefly talk about how it got started, because I know it's only been around a few years and it's grown a lot. Because I remember the first time it was advertised, and compared to now, it's expanded a lot. So if you just give me a little backstory about how you guys decided to do it and how you guys went about it.
Sure. So it basically started, as I said, you know, earlier when I got back into competitive gaming in seventh, when I got, you know, I was like looking around for the big London events. You know, London's city of 10 million people. I was like, you know, where's the, you know, the 200 person GTs? And they weren't any. So me and my buddies, you know, we're in a pub having a laugh about, you know, how what 40K used to be looked like. And we basically said, you know, as customers, we want to attend this event. It doesn't exist, so let's make it happen. Mm-hmm. And we sort of went from there. So we first year round, we wanted to do things a little differently. So we were the first first large tournament in the UK that also had you know, mats on every table. So we went out and got a decent mat sponsor and put a mat on every table. So we tried to, you know, not just be big, but also be really high quality.
Right.
So we sort of went out for 200 first year. Didn't get quite there. We sold, I think, about 120 tickets and had about 100 people turn up.
Okay.
So, you know, for year one, that's great. You know, we're really pleased with it. You know, if you compare that to, say, you know, Nova or Adepticon, their first years, I think they did around 80 people in Adepticon or whatever. So, you know, we were men of great ambition and we did well, but not quite as well as we would have liked.
Right.
But year two was really where it all, you know, sort of exploded a bit because Games Workshop got on board, you know, Warhammer TV come down and broadcast from the event.
Right.
Promoted us on social media and stuff. And, you know, we sold out in, I think, 11 days or something. So we sold 220 odd tickets in 11 days.
Wow.
So yeah, we're super pleased. We'd added a little narrative 30K event because a lot of the competitive 40K players were getting burnt out a bit at the end of seventh.
Yeah, I remember a lot of switching over to 30K.
We did that. Yeah. That was really popular. And now we're moving from being, you know, a large 40K event to being a proper wargaming convention. So this year we've added in an Age of Sigmar GT. We've got a massive Blood Bowl Cup. We're going to do what the event I'm really excited about is we're doing a Necromunda campaign weekend as well. So that's going to be, with the new games coming out,
we've got
a really passionate crowd around here. I think it's a seminal game that, you know, loads of people love. Mm. So, I'm excited to help build that with the event lead that's running that. But yeah, we try to double in size every year. So this year we're trying to hit 500 gamers and 100 spectators through the door.
Okay.
So, you know, it's growing, it's changing. You know, the UK doesn't have its version of Adepticon or, you know, LVO yet. So we're very much,
right.
You know, that's our ambition is it's to be a wargaming convention with a focus on organized play as opposed to, you know, being a trade show. So yeah, that's
always heard and I've noticed that there's trade shows in the UK and especially, but not really any like conventions like we have here in the US, like LVO or Adepticon or Nova, where it's more about the gaming, whereas from what I can see, I don't know, I mean, if I'm wrong, let me know. It's more, like you said, like a trade show or with yeah, games yeah. in it.
Yeah, so, exactly. I mean, we've got Salute and right. UK Games Expo. You know, they both get, you know, 20 to 50,000 people through the door. Yes. You know, they're popular. And, you know, they're big. But, you know, I was in original talks of Salute when I was setting up the LGT, see if there's a potential, you know, synergies or working together. They basically said, you know, we don't have the space or inclination really to run a large tournament, which is fine. That's their thing. But our thing is definitely, you know, we want to be the premier right. games convention in, you know, in the UK. And in Europe, you know, it's Europe's twice the size, twice the population of the States. You know, there's lots of gamers. So I think, you know, there really is a massive, massive growth potential, to basically take the best events in the world and sort of replicate the success they've had, but over here.
And from what I've seen and what I heard, it sounds like you're doing a good job of it so far. The decision to, or what prompt? I know. So was the original intent was just to have the grand tournament. After the first one, is that when you decided maybe you want to expand, or was it just after this last one in 2017 that you decided, hey, maybe we can include? We added the 30K, and that seemed to go well. Did you guys?
Yeah. So it was a difficult decision, mainly down to cost. I mean,
right.
we definitely wanted to basically host the biggest wargaming party we could. You know, that's right. What we're about is basically trying to be like a music festival, but for Warhammer sort of okay. thing. We want to basically just have a big party with people that are like-minded and, right. you know, center it around our, you know, our mutual love for the hobby. So, you know, adding new systems and getting people involved that are passionate about the hobby was sort of a natural growth thing. But the main real concern is in London, you know, venue costs are so prohibitively expensive that probably yes. explains why no one's done it before.
Yeah, it's the same reason why in Los Angeles, most Los Angeles, like the LAGT from when it was put on by GW was not in LA.
Yeah, it's the same reason that, you know, there's not one in Manhattan, you know, it's exactly right. the same reason. But, but you know, we're sort of, we're trying to change that. So mm-hmm. every year we add a new event or if we add a significant number of people, that year, financially makes a loss for us because we have to shell out not just on more space to put people in, but all the tables and stuff, and it all adds up. So our sort of the way we try and stay in the black is 1 year of heavy investment and growth, and then the following year try to, you know, recoup some of that upfront spend, okay. Which has worked so far. You know, first year we lost quite a significant amount of money. Second year that sort of balanced that out. This year we'll probably lose a bit, you know, significant amount of money again, but over the long run. Hopefully I won't go bankrupt and, you know, we'll put on a massive party for everyone and everyone will have a good time because that's, you know, really why we're doing it is
right.
so that everyone can have a laugh with their mates really and play some 40K and Sigma and whatever games they play.
Is the plan to keep it, GW only or is there possibilities of expanding it to other game systems?
I mean, the decision.
The future, I guess right now.
Well, definitely not this year. I mean, this year we're adding enough stuff, and
yeah.
it really comes down to finding people that are passionate and reliable to run the events. So, I personally, my gaming group is predominantly Games Virtual Games, so right. it's relatively more easy for me to find people that I can rely upon to help. Mm-hmm. Fantasy Flight obviously run their own stuff anyway, so yes. if you're working with them, you're very much just providing a venue for them to work in, which is not how we normally run. I like to have, you know, the team involved in everything, so it's very much a communal event as opposed to being, you know, just here's some space, run whatever you want in it.
Yeah.
So, it's not off the cards, you know, Drop Zone Commander and a lot of, you know, sort of Warlord type games and Mantic games are popular over here, but, you know, I've not, I don't have the expertise at the moment to add them in. So it will be if and when they're added, it will be either in 2019.
I was just curious if it's, because I know with Adepticon and with LVO, both of them are more, they started out as Games Workshop, but then expanded to other game systems as the years went on,
I think at Nova this year, they had twice as many attendees playing X-Wing than they did 40K.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that started up as a 40K event too. So
I don't get X-Wing, but I mean, I get it, but it doesn't appeal to me. But a lot of especially board gamers.
That's what I think it is. I think it's a glorified board game, I think, really. I mean, it's cool models and stuff, but it's not.
They're pre-painted pieces. And the little chits are pre-measured. You don't have to really do any measuring, things like that. Yeah, I agree. The other thing I wanted to ask, especially in the U.S., there's a lot of grand tournaments. I personally think it's too many, I only think it's too many because they all seem the same, where it's just all 3 days, 2 days, 5 games. None are really unique, maybe in the price support or the location. And a lot of them, I'm going to SoCal Grand Tournament. And that will be, I think, my fourth one in just California. I have not left the state of California. Or no, I did once for Boise. But I've stayed in my immediate area within reasonable driving distance, although I don't know if 14-hour drive is reasonable. for me it is. That's like one day at work. Is there something you plan on doing or plan to do to make it unique and make people even want to go to it more, especially if it becomes more popular and people decide on their own to maybe do their own 2-day event, maybe not as big, and where you start to see, I don't want to call it competition, but you start to see more GTs or like the GW Heats, which they brought back. Mm.
Sure. So, we have, as far as GTs go in the UK, we've got probably 400-man events over the course of the year, or 100-plus, mine included. So it's – and they're all sort of 3 months apart from each other, so it's a really healthy way to have the game, the community working. We've got, a tournament every weekend if you want to go play a 30-man event. So that's a different type of experience if you want to go do that. I personally feel like we already have differentiated ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's not just location differentiation. So we're the only event in, the only GT in south of England, basically. The only one in London for sure. And London's a tourist destination. People want to come here. It's a brilliant party.
Yes.
It's half as expensive as most people think it is. So actually when you get here, you've got a ton of money to spend on beer. So the scale and the location make it unique already, notwithstanding the fact that we probably have about 5 to 10 times more prize support than any other event in the country. And Warhammer TV are here, so we've got lots of things that differentiate us already. That's just in the 40K event. We are very much multi-system now.
Right.
And we're probably the only, I think there's one other event in the country which is multi-system. So there's only really, one other event that's comparable, and that's in November. We're in May, so 6 months apart. I don't think is too much. So I think I think your point is valid, but in the UK it's not so much of an issue yet. And if it was, I think that's probably a good thing. I think it shows health in the hobby.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but it's my location because I'm literally in the geographic sense. I'm down the street from FL Frontline Gaming, And so there's a lot of tournaments / grand tournaments within California itself, to be honest. We're lucky in that respect. But at the same time, it's I feel like if you want to do a grand tournament nowadays in the U.S. or in my area, in the Western United States, you need to do something that really sets you apart from the other ones. Other than just being a 5-day event. So I was just curious if there was anything, because I'm not familiar with, as far as Boise so far, for my grandparents. Yeah. So I don't know if there was anything else. Like I said, because the GW, because they stopped doing the heats before, correct?
Yeah, so Games Workshop got back involved in the tournament scene. I mean, they've always been doing events. They do Throne of Skulls and the sort of narrative-driven organized
play. I remember seeing that,
Yeah, so they got back into doing organized events in Sigmar, you know, last year, but in 40K they did it in at the end of May last year.
Okay.
So they basically tried to run a big GT, and they had, you know, a place that was, could have held like 700 people, but they only sold about 80 tickets or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran it, you know, for all their games. And it was good. It was a good party. It was a good first attempt. And it, but there were some, you know, teething issues, as you'd expect for any sort of first time.
Right.
Since then, they've also, you know, relaunched the Grand Tournament series. So they've got the three heats followed by the final. They sold out in a couple of days. So I think that's 70 man events. Yeah, but they're great, but they, you know, obviously I know them very well being a playtester, but, their events team and their, sort of rules team are different departments. You know, it's a multinational company, not one person doesn't handle everything. So it's, it's sort of like the premier events in the UK are still definitely independent, mm-hmm. but it's good to see Games Workshop, you know, putting an effort in and, you know, coming back to the scene. Cause, you know, there's a lot of tournament players out there. You know, they buy a lot of stuff. They're responsible for a lot of the revenue Games Workshop makes. So.
And they're also responsible for the almost the narrative of the game, I would say, because people, even though people aren't competitive or they don't compete in tournaments, they still look at competitive lists just to beat their buddy.
Yeah.
Like my brother, exactly. I mean, like my brother goes online and he looks and he sees what works or what's been working and he'll try it with me, even though he doesn't play in tournaments.
Yeah. No, I mean, every time I go to my club, somebody who doesn't play in a tournament will come up to me and say, hey, I read about this. Is it good? And I was like, well, where do you read about it? Well, you read about it in a tournament report.
Yeah.
So, you know, the internet traffic and the chatter and the content on the internet is very much tournament centric, even if it's only 10% of the market.
Yes.
The media side of things is very much dominated by it.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what I've been seeing also in our local store. I forgot what my question was. Well, I'll just move on. You mentioned the playtesting in that just with GW. In regards to that, I know you can't talk about certain things. How did that come about? Did they just like send you an email saying, hey, you run this big event, come help us out? Or did they, you know, the guy in a trench coat in the back of an alley just hand you this envelope or you find
it? Yeah, well, kind of, I mean, like, it's a funny story actually, because, you know, but bear in mind, you know, they started talking to us before the whole sort of change of, approach was public yet. So it was back in the day, you know, seems like ages ago, but it was only
ages ago.
When, you know, everyone was hating on Games Workshop because they didn't listen to anyone, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I put on, you know, this big party, this big 40K event that, you know, everyone loved. And I was doing stuff differently. So UK scene doesn't really market itself, on social media as much, you know, it just does it for event organizing as opposed to, you know, trying to build the community and build the hobby, which is definitely something I am about.
Right.
So, you know, I've been on a bunch of podcasts talking about, you know, kickstarting, you know, a new GT sort of thing. Oh, so okay. Having this sort of conversation, but back before the first event. And so that got their attention. They'd heard about the event through that. And then after the first event was so successful, they basically got in touch and just said, you know, we want to be involved, in the community. You know, we're organizing this trip. And obviously it was all, you know, super, super top secret. So even though I was completely shocked, it was exciting. The rest is history, as you know. I mean, it's well known now that, you know, the group of playtesters, mm-hmm. You know, Reese, Frankie, Mike, you guys at Adepticon.
Yeah.
You know, we all sort of met up in Nottingham and went from there. So it was, it's definitely a shock, came out of the blue. But was, you know, very, very indicative of the change of approach Games Workshop were really fighting to implement, and, has been, you know, hugely successful. Their stock price has doubled since we've been involved with them as, playtesters. Well, I'm not going to claim responsibility for, but, you know, it's nice to see that their hard work, and their initiatives to get people like myself involved, is really paying off to, you know, their bottom line and their shareholders. Mm-hmm. So I'm pleased for them as much as I am for the community generally.
Yeah, it's having been a Games Workshop customer for X amount of years now. I only say that because I don't want to reveal my age. but I did say Rogue Trader, so that was and that was out when I was in high school. So and seeing basically the ups and downs, the rise and I don't want to say fall, but more or less the plateau. And then and now this again, it harkens back to the 3.5 fourth edition phase when they were a bit more involved and they ran tournaments. I don't know if they're going to try to run tournaments in the U.S. again. I don't think they will. But I'm very much happy with the where which the direction the company is going right now. Since the turnover, I had issues with 7th towards the end, but I think a lot of people did. But that's we have our theories on that, our crazy crackpot theories. But I think overall, I'm more than happy with where the company's at. It's almost like a lot of people said, it's like a new golden age, especially with a lot of the specialist games coming back. I'm so excited for Necromunda. I actually can't wait for Shadespire. You know, I'm stoked for that. Necromunda, Adeptus Titanicus, I guess the other rumor, or I think they announced Battlefleet Gothic, you know, things.
Ooh,
like
that. I haven't heard that one.
I thought they announced it at Forge World weekend. I can't remember now. I think it was Battlefleet Gothic, but Horus Heresy to start with. Just like Adeptus Mechanicus.
Yeah.
It's going to be Horus Heresy centric in the beginning. And see where they go from there. But, I mean, Blood Bowl. I played in a 40-person Blood Bowl league recently. So people love it.
Blood Bowl's hugely successful. I mean, there's a lot of people that played throughout the whole period where Games Workshop weren't supporting it.
Yeah.
There's hundreds of players. So, you know, we're going to capitalize on that. You know, we're going to put on, you know, the London Blood Bowl Cup or whatever we've decided to call it. I think it's called the Blood Bowl GT. But, you know, I'm confident that not only will that event be a success, but it's also going to be a little bit unprecedented, I think. You know, Games Workshop used to run big Blood Bowl Cups, and they still got their original cup from when they used to run them at Nottingham. But really, the NAF has been doing a great job in their absence, and I think it would be good to see that hobby, you know, grow and be more supported again.
Yeah, I still have a set of dice I got from them early on when I signed up for the NAF, and we have a local guy that he helped run the Blood Bowl League in between now and back when GW still ran it. So in our local area, we had someone that carried the torch when it wasn't being produced by Games Workshop. But in regards to the playtesting, I don't know if you can answer this, but I want to ask at what point you were involved? Did it include the indexes, or was it after the indexes in terms of being able to give input to anything that they make? Do you know what I'm trying to say? Because
I know what you're trying to say. I'm trying to answer it in a way that's helpful. Because
a lot of people are wondering if, and I'm just going to be honest, because a lot of people will wonder this, and will probably want me to ask you, at what point did the playtesters playtest? Because some people think that the indexes were not playtested. Only because of things like the smite spam, the character spam, things like that. Or was that just known?
The character spam and the smite spam, you know, talking as a gamer, not as a playtester.
Okay, then that's
they don't relate to the indices at all. You know, they relate to the rules.
Okay.
I can't say obviously the exact specifics because being inappropriate, but you know, Games Workshop very kindly gave us accreditation and a thank you in some of the stuff we've been involved with. So it doesn't take too much investigation to sort of figure that one out because it's published. It's written down for anyone to go read. But you know, what I can say is, I think the involvement Games Workshop has allowed us is unprecedented.
Yes.
And I think I'm not bragging, but everyone seems to be loving the game. It seems to be the most popular edition since third, probably. And, we take no credit for that. You know, the Games Workshop guys have done a great job. But the playtesting certainly helps, as opposed to hinders. So, I think people always break games [S2] Yes. [S1] When they're played competitively. And, you know, the amount of time and energy that the playtesters have is obviously limited because we're a finite number of people. Mm-hmm. So when you have 40,000 people playing a game for 2 weeks, after that first week is done or first 2 weeks are done, you've played more games than the playtest could have done in 10 years. Yeah. So, you know, we do our best. And, you know, I think the caliber of the game and the product, is a real testament to the fact that, you know, countless hours at Games Workshop send and, you know, around the world in different playtesting pods has been spent trying to make the product we love and that we're passionate about, you know, as best as we can.
No, I agree. I thoroughly enjoy 8th, even with warts and all. Compared to previous editions, it's just...
I think just to take the Smite Spam thing, you know, a little bit out of mm-hmm. context, because you know, you raised a potential issue with the game. And I think the issue with it is not an issue of games design. I think it's an issue of interpretation. So if you read the blurb under Smite about what it is in the fluff, right, so what it actually represents, is it represents the various forms of psychic powers. So, you know, one psychic smite might be shooting lightning bolts, one might be fireballs, whatever. And if they were all named individually on each of the psychic's data sheets, this psychic does the blah, 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 the effects would still be the same, you know, D3 mortal wounds, whatever. People would have a lot less of an issue with it because it wouldn't be seen as being spammy. It would be seen as, you know, I've just got these cool psychic powers, and oh yeah, they all do the same thing. But, you know, it's a legitimate way to build an army, for example.
Right.
And, so I think, you know, there's a tendency for people to overreact. Smite Spam, while strong,
is surprising.
Yeah. Your nerds raging on the internet? What a surprise. Obviously people are allowed their opinions and, you know, and we're grateful for them because, you know, the sort of feedback we all get as event organizers goes into shaping our events and ultimately, you know, the hobbies and the community's enjoyment. But,
right.
You know, Smite Spam is strong. Is it winning every single tournament?
No.
You know, okay. You look at Andrew Gonyo's list at Nova. You know, he had a couple of psychics in there, but he wasn't Smite Spam.
Yeah, he wasn't.
Fundamentally, It's for event organizers to, if they perceive Smite as being an issue, to design missions that favor armies that don't include it. Or if they don't see it as being an issue at all, then, you know, play straight out of the rulebook. There's no issues with that, you know. So everyone's got a different opinion. Personally, I think if we start calling Smite, you know, lightning bolts of Zinch or whatever, then...
Right, if you give it a different name like they used to do, where a lot of people have the same spells, but they gave it a different name, it doesn't seem as bad. Because they're casting different things. No, yeah, I get it. In regards to just you mentioned earlier about when you play in as a playtester that your mind is at a different place. Is that because my when we talk about the playtesters, I've always brought that up that maybe something wasn't caught because one, you don't play enough games you can only play so many games in a given amount of time. And two, that a lot of times when you're a playtester, you're mentally, you're in a different place. Am I correct in that? Well,
you're fine, right? So there's a couple of things I think, you know, of course, we don't catch everything. It's impossible to do that, but
it's not
what you don't see, of course, is all the things we did catch. So, it could have been one thing, could have been a million things, like, we'll never know because it won't be stressed out to the competitive level. But what we do, and the way you play when you're a playtest, I mean, like, you test the games before, you probably know as well as anyone, is you're not playing a game exactly the same way as you would a GT final. You know, if you're on top table last event, like, you don't play in the same way. You don't design lists in the same way. Like, our list design, or my personal list design process for playtesting, is not just try and make the most broken thing and then fix that thing. Because, you know, to be honest, you know, it's not necessarily the right approach. You know, what you want to be doing is creating a game or helping, you know, the broader team in whatever way you can. Mm-hmm. So you do think differently. But that's not to say we don't, try to identify as much as we can. Right. And, you know, ultimately, you know, Games Workshop have done a great job in giving us a game that didn't have a lot of things to catch. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it's, you're right. You do think differently about it, but that's more a case of risk management, and about the competitive scene as opposed to, our skill as competitive players and list builders, because, you know, the players involved are, you know, without doubt strong players. You know, you can't doubt their ability as gamers. It's really just a question of time. I think it comes down to more than anything else is no matter whether you play every hour, every waking hour or not, the amount of like hours at the gaming table, once you open the game up to, you know, say 50,000 people, ultimately, of course, they're going to see something that, you know, me playing as many games as I could in a week missed, or, right, or any other playtesters.
Do you ever slip and say a rule during a game? Like you went to Nova, did you ever slip with a, oh, this does this, and then you're like, oh, wait, it doesn't do that yet?
Yeah, I've done that before, yeah. I actually had, I was playing in a casual tournament, and, I'd had about 10 beers, I think, and had this big argument about cover. And it turned out that I was playing a rule that was completely different.
There you go. Did you have to kill him afterwards? Yeah. Is that part of the NDA?
No.
You tell anybody?
No. No, I mean, of course, like, you're keeping two sets of rules in your head at the same time. It was particularly troublesome when we were playing third, because I'd be in a tournament playing, sorry, not third, seventh. Be in a tournament playing seventh, and then I'd play an eighth third rule. But I managed to cover it up very well. I mean, yeah, it didn't disclose anything that was sensitive by any means.
Okay. And everyone is still constantly, so I'm assuming you balance your play test with your, let's say if you're, do you practice going to tournaments now since you play test? Do you try to balance that? If
you depends on the tournament.
Or does it,
so,
or because you're not,
so for example,
Let's say for Nova. So for Nova, because you decided to take a list that was going to be different than the norm, obviously you probably had to play, you had to practice with that more. I guess how was balancing?
It's pretty easy. So there's certain big events that I'll attend, that I want to win or I want to do my best at. And I'll build a list that I think is good for that format. And then in the run up to that, I'll go to a bunch of what you guys call RTTs, but we just, you know, 30 man events or whatever.
Right.
So my practice for Nova, for example, I played, I guess 10 games with the army, in two tournaments the weekends before. So I played three tournaments in a row, basically, in five game tournaments. But none of my, so basically I prepare for big tournaments by going to small tournaments.
Right.
None of my quote unquote, what would be a casual game or a pickup game for most people. I don't play any, current 8th edition pickup games. I play because I'm playtesting.
Oh, okay.
So, and the only exception to that was, ETC because, you know, as a team event, you know, you're expected to really bring Ray games. So I played a ton of pickup games practicing that. So, but no, I mean, yeah, if I need to quote unquote train for an event, then I do by going to smaller events.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, like more success story for the Banshees. I mean, you came second in a couple of random tournaments.
So then Zach, I'm assuming by the sound of it, you're enjoying, being a playtester.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, I'm a heart, I'm a gamer, so
it's almost like one of the dream job, even though you don't really get paid.
I mean, it's got its good bits and its bad bits, right? Because you spend all this, you know, emotional investment, you know, getting really attached to, like, oh, you spot this amazing combo, you're like, oh, this is just, and then you realize, you know, actually your job is to spot those things, so that they don't necessarily work anymore or whatever. So, no, I mean, I enjoy playing, competitively and the playtesting is, competitive focused. but you don't play it, you know, in public events or whatever. So
how does it,
you know, I enjoy.
No, I'm sorry for cutting you off. But how does it feel when you play test something and people aren't seeing what you meant when you guys put, you know, when this rule book came out or when this rule came out or you know, or just how you thought something was great and maybe some other people don't. Like, people are thinking opposite. You thought this one unit or this one rule or this one combo, like you were saying, was great, but when it goes out into the world, turns out it's not so great. Are you kind of bummed? Or are you kind of like, oh, man, I thought that was good?
not so much. I mean, like, the thing that we can never predict or emulate is the meta. Mm-hmm. So we can understand what we think is going to be good, but we can't understand how people are going to choose to use counters to it, okay. And then what counters are going to be developed for the counters to that counter.
Right.
So, you know, we identify, or, you know, if I'm really happy with what a codex is looking like or whatever, and I'm sitting there, you know, I'm pleased with the performance of my army list that I've written, that's not going to be necessarily how somebody else would write a list for that codex once it goes public. So, I'm not disappointed. I think a lot of the time, you know, when we think, okay, right, this is strong, and not every unit in the game has to be, you know, equivalent. So, you know, legitimately some units are stronger than others. So I'm not pleased, annoyed if people spot the same things or different things. It's more, it's more a case of just being pleased that people are enjoying the game, to be honest.
Yeah.
So if people were criticizing the game generally, which I don't think is true, then it's a signal that we need to be working in a different way. And that's not the case at the moment. So I think everything's working well. In a real critique.
And this is probably the last question. And this is in regards to maybe as a playtester and especially as an organizer, in regards to how quickly, at least in gaming terms, not in video gaming terms, but how quickly Games Workshop is responding to certain builds in the meta or certain rules interactions that maybe they didn't mean to happen. My question is, how does one as a tournament organizer deal with that? Like when they came out with the FAQ for us a week before the Bay Area Open.
Yeah, I mean, that was a hard one for you guys.
Not for me, because I use flyers, but...
In Europe, generally, there's a strong tradition of having a rules cutoff date at the same time as what would be an army list submission deadline.
Okay.
Which is typically two weeks or a month before, the event. So, that's pretty traditional and pretty locked in. So the norm, would be if it doesn't affect any army list choices, then it still comes into play. So if it's just a genuine clarification, then that would still be used. But not something that changes, how you may have chosen to construct your army. So for example, the flyer one, where you'd never choose to bring flyers or that many. So that one wouldn't have been used if the Bay Area Open was being run in Europe, because it would have been, you know, a 2 week grace period or whatever beforehand.
Right.
Okay. That's how I operate as a tournament organizer. You know, you have to publicize in advance when people buy tickets, but how rules are going to be treated, right? So you need to make sure everyone's aware of what they're buying.
We used to do a 30 day window. But that was back when you only had one release every quarter or two releases a quarter, as opposed to one every month or two every month. Nowadays, I think for the SoCal GT, it's 2 weeks. So anything before October 16th, no, that's a week. Anything before October 16th is good to go in terms of that tournament. But it's usually the TO. There's no standard anymore, really. People remember the 30 day, but it's not something anything holds to anymore. But with that being said, I have to thank you, Zach, for being on.
It's been a pleasure.
Giving your time. If you want any last words of where they can go to, if they want to go to the London GT?
So our website is the place to go for all the information. So we are www.lgtpresents.co.uk. On there, at the present, you'll find all the information about The events we're running, and from the 1st of November, ticket sales will be live, so our store will be up there as well. If you Facebook us, there's some sort of social content up, so photos of previous events and people having a little chat. So if you want to get involved, the best thing to do is to sign up to our mailing list on the website and to follow and like the group on Facebook.
Okay. And I'll put up the links for that when the episode goes live. But again, great. Thank you. And
no worries.
Good night.
Thanks very much.
That was our interview with Zach from the London GT. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Just look up TFG Radio. We announce all our shows that come out, whether it's Twitch, the bonus episodes, or when I record with Travis and the producer. Also, don't forget to follow us on iTunes, where you can make sure to have the episodes download as soon as the shows come up on iTunes. In addition, if you can, please leave a review and a star rating. That would help us in the metrics in terms of just getting the show out there and for people to look for whenever they look for 40K. Also, don't forget to visit the webpage, tfgradio.com. That includes articles by Danny, sometimes by myself and John, and now Tom with the Tau articles. It also has our merchandise, which is shirts, dice, wound counters, objectives. Go to the website, click on the tab that says merchandise, and just click on the links, and I'll take you to whichever merchandise that you want. So, that's the episode for today. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon.